Hi, and welcome to the Tough Fish Show. I'm your host, Jen Milius, and I'm so glad that you're here. And before we get into the show, I've got a resource for you if you're ready to take those next steps of visibility and sharing. The Author Stylist Guide, Own Your Greatness, Get Visible, and Share Your Message is my new book that is your toolbox for the steps to make the most of speaking engagements, book signings, and podcast interviews when they arise, so you grow your readership and create a buzz about your catalog of work and message. And there are book bonuses too. Visit jennifermilius.com/books to get your copy of the book and sign up for the bonuses. And now let me introduce to you Lee Bukowski. Lee Bukowski lives in Reading, Pennsylvania, where she teaches freshman writing at Alverna University. When she's not teaching or writing, she loves reading and traveling, especially visiting her grown daughters in Boston and Fort Lauderdale. Lee is also a self-proclaimed Billy Joel superfan with a live concert count of 49 shows. A Week of Warm Weather is her debut novel. She's currently at work writing her second book, a fiction novel about hope, forgiveness, and second chances. Let's dive into the pond and meet Lee. Welcome to the Tough Fish Show. I am so excited to bring to you Lee Bukowski. Lee, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hi, Jen. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so glad you are here, and I would love for you to start with apparently my favorite question ever. How did you get into writing?
I think that is a very logical question. And so for me, I think that, so I've always been a very an avid reader, fiction, mostly women's fiction. And as the years went on, I would read these books and the characters' journeys would stick with me. I would really connect with the characters. Some of their situations resonated with me personally, if not personally, then maybe situations that I was familiar with. And so I found myself really, thinking about these characters long after I finished the book. And of course, I would go to work, I'd talk to other people who've read the books and that kind of thing. And in that way, it's almost like you have a community, and it's almost like you know these characters. And so fast forward several years, I was, well, I as I said, I'd like to call myself a recovering seventh grade English teacher, but I left the education world and I decided that, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could do that for readers. Maybe I could write a story. As I went through my adult life, I encountered some challenges, as many of us do, and I learned from them and I grew as a result of them. And I thought I would love to write a book where my characters would resonate with my readers and they could connect with those characters. And so I think that's really what took me from avid reader to a career in writing.
So I love that. I love that you said recovering seventh grade English teacher. That is so awesome. But I'm curious though, because in that role, you're guiding young writers to understand how to put things together, how to strengthen their voice or on the page type of thing. You're helping them to organize thoughts. But it's different when you shift into the role of you being the writer in a different field too. So if you're writing in one context, when you're writing papers for school, a lot of times they're nonfiction, relatively speaking. You've done some research and you're putting together something and you're putting together your thoughts with it. Depending upon the class, you might have had a creative writing assignment, but relatively speaking, it's kind of nonfiction in that thought process. And so switching over to true fiction and writing about characters and being in the writer's role, what was that transition like? Was it easy? Was it challenging to kind of shift gears too?
Yes and no. And it's interesting that you say that because what I really did teach was nonfiction writing, essay writing. As you said, here and there'd be a creative paper. But even those I found with my students and even in my own writing, you still develop your own voice, your own unique voice. Often I could start to read a paper, as you said, a nonfiction, whether it was a persuasive essay or whatnot. I could cover up the name, and after reading the first few paragraphs, I could tell you the student who wrote it because you, even though it's nonfiction writing, you do develop your own voice. So for me, the transition, I knew I had a story to tell, but I felt like I lacked a little bit of the training that might be necessary. And I know there are writers who never take a creative writing class and they just, pound out these novels and they're fabulous. But I really felt like I needed, in order to make that transition, I felt like I needed some training. So what I did was I enrolled in a master's program, a creative writing master's program with a concentration in fiction. And it took me about 2 years to complete it. So I had then, when I left my teaching career, I actually did both for a year, and that was way too stressful. Pesky things like eating and sleeping, things I didn't have time for. And so I learned a lot. I transitioned from the writing teacher who taught essay writing to a fiction writer because each class focused on a different aspect of writing fiction. The greatest thing about the program that I was in was that the last two classes were the thesis writing classes, where you had to complete the first 30,000 words of a novel in order to complete the program. And I was ready. It was a shame because there were some people in the program who just dropped out at that point. They went, 90% of the way, but they weren't ready. But I was ready because I knew the story, but it obviously needs a lot of, as an editor, a lot of refining afterward. But I really felt like that transition, taking, getting that master's degree, taking those courses, having peers. All my professors were published fiction authors. My peers, we did a lot of peer editing, and so that even though it was an online course, they did a great job of creating like a classroom community. So I think that transition really helped me go from, essay writing teacher to fiction writer.
I love that, but I bet that the skills that you learned too from the creative writing still go back and would strengthen how you would guide your students on the essay
Absolutely.
side. Because back to your point about it being, finding your voice, if it's a persuasive paper in particular, you're trying to essentially sell a story. You're trying to sell a message, in which case you might be crafting something that, although, yes, it's nonfiction, you're still creating a basis that you want somebody to buy into, just like you do in fiction. You want someone to buy into that character so that they stay with them and they see that character through all of the journey that the character will go through.
Absolutely, that's a great point.
So tell me, when you made that transition and you were working on, now you're going to work on your own piece, a piece that you want to get published. What was that like? I mean, did you take the work that you did in the master's program? Was it something in there that started to become the first book that was published? Or was it, okay, now that I've done this, I have a new story I want to work on, and that's the book I want to do? Like, what happened there?
No, it was the same story, but what I learned and what I took from the master's program was, so ways to create authentic dialogue, how early or how soon to reveal things. At what point do you want the reader to know something but not the character, or vice versa? So I had the story in my head, most of it. I actually ended up adding a subplot to the novel when I actually sat down to wrote it that I didn't originally have in my head. So it was the same story. It was a story that I knew I wanted to write, but I took some of the skills that I learned in the master's program and applied them to my writing. And sometimes it works, and as I'm sure you know, sometimes it flops. And it's really very much, it's a lot of trial and error. And I learn something, and then I write this piece of dialogue or whatever it might be, and I think, oh, this is great, this is fantastic. And then you put it out there to your peer editors and your professors, and they're saying, I think you should cut this. I don't really think that it's really doing. And so, yeah, but to answer your question, I ha it was the same story. I just applied much of what I learned in the master's program.
I love that. So talk to me about dialogue, because it is such a wonderful way to show the characters, to show their personalities, to show things that are going on in it, and it allows the character to basically do some of the work in that respect because they are having those conversations. So talk to me a bit more about how you do create authentic dialogue.
It's funny, as writers, we are sort of people watchers, as we've talked about, and even eavesdroppers. But it's really like a sociology project. I'm always listening to people talking. Now, not because I'm trying to intervene in their problems or their lives, but more so for what you were just talking about is the authenticity of dialogue. When, readers are smart. Readers are smart. They know in a minute if you're a fraud. And so that's where I think, depending on the situation, depending on the area of the country or the world where you are setting your story, I have found that listening to people talk helps me to create that authentic dialogue. And so, there are different, obviously, there are different dynamics, and you can be in the grocery store and it might be a teenager talking to his or her mother, or a toddler talking to his or her mother, or a couple, or a few friends. And just based on, it's not even so much that you're listening to the words. For me, I'm more listening to their intonation and their inflection, and even their facial expressions and their body language is all, that's all part of dialogue. In my book, I have, as I, you and I talked about it, I have some very sensitive issues in my book. And it's not that it's a depressing book. It is a journey. It's a character's emotional journey, but this character has some real struggles. But there are also very lighthearted scenes and lighthearted moments in the book. One of the settings in the book is a diner, right? We love diners. So I'm here in Eastern Pennsylvania. We love our diners. But if you listen to people talking in diners, it is just a wealth of information and understanding, I think, because when you're sitting in a diner, you're sitting there having a cup of coffee and an omelet, whatever it might be, that's real conversation taking place there. And so, the other thing that I always do, and I've made some wonderful connections with wonderful authors, and now another one today. And one of the things we always talk about is I tend to read a lot of my dialogue out loud because I need to hear it. Because if I'm reading it and it sounds scripted or it sounds a little bit, and sometimes you want that. Sometimes you have a character who does speak in, depending if it's a who it might be that they're speaking to, or an executive or whatever it might be, you might elevate the language a little bit. But for the situation, whatever the situation is in the, in that scene, I think reading it out loud really is helpful to be able to say, yes, that sounds authentic, or oh no, that really sounds scripted and I have to change it.
Well, and I think to add to that too, when you're reading it out loud, one of the things that happens is you pay attention to how your body is, because
Exactly.
if you realize when you're reading a certain part and maybe your shoulders are going back, or maybe you're hunching over, or maybe you can almost feel like your hand starting to grip or something because maybe it's a tense scene or something. Those might be cues that you want to add into the scene itself. Sometimes when I'm editing somebody else's piece, I will act it out. So, I mean, there are times when in my office space, you might walk by and go, oh, today's acting class, I guess. But I mean, reading it out loud and physically moving around with it helps too, because does this feel authentic too? So I love that you read out loud. And you're also listening for like contractions in particular, people in general conversation, and depending on the relationships too, to your point, will tend to lean towards, having contractions. I was listening to an audiobook, and I'm drawing a blank on the title, but there was a voice that was supposed to be basically kind of robotic. And the voice was also supposed to be a little sinister. And there were no contractions. And it was just like, oh, that's creepy. Well done. Just
Yes.
because it's the robotic and it's supposed to have a creep factor. So it blended it very nicely because there weren't contractions. And that gave the vibe that it needed to, where another character would never have done that unless they
Whatever.
were making a point.
Right. And it's funny because as an English teacher, you would never, if someone would write on their paper, I wanna do this or I'm gonna do that, you get that twitch in your eye. But when it's casual conversation between characters, that's often how people talk. Even English teachers like me have been known to throw in a wanna or a gonna. But it's that what is the relationship? What is the scene? What's going on? And that authenticity in dialogue is so important.
Actually, you have struck something that I love that you said it, that there, when you're writing, when you've been taught to write from 7th grade, when you're really focused on cultivating a strong writing skill. And especially if you are in a corporate space where you are writing either for other people or about the company, you don't use a lot of contractions. In fact, it's not necessarily about it being so formal as much as you are, that's how you were taught. So you're not trying to, you're still trying to use your voice, but you're not necessarily always trying to say, well, it has to sound this way. So I am curious what it was like to essentially break a little bit of those habits when it's showing up in the creative writing. So to your point, I don't want to go to the store. Well, you could hear a character say that, but you could also hear them say, I don't want to go. And to your point, that transition, or using more contractions when you are writing, you didn't really use contractions that much when you were writing papers or when you're writing in the corporate setting. So talk to me about, breaking some of those rules. What's that feel like?
It feels like it just feels like you're just an unruly teenager, and I'm gonna do whatever. I'm gonna use contractions in my writing, and I'm gonna write wanna instead of want to. It's like, this is, look at me breaking out of my English teacher shell. And it's funny because my laptop has not yet accepted it. Whenever I write gonna, it underlines it with the red squiggly line because I write in Word. And I'm like, I know, I'm sorry, but that's how the character would say that. And, so it really is, because I was always one, even in texting, I used proper grammar. And, oh my gosh, if I would send a text message and it would have an error. So it is a transition, and it's strange. Again, because when I would teach my students, don't use contractions, that this is formal writing, that kind of thing. So it is a stretch. And then you kind of go back to it when you're writing the narrative part of the novel with that isn't conversation or isn't casual, then you have to switch back again. In my book, there was a toddler. And that's another thing that's kind of interesting, because I happen to have a, now I have a lot of babies and toddlers around me. I listen to my 4-year-old niece and how she might say something. And the toddler in my book is younger. But that's another thing where they don't use proper grammar, and they don't necessarily pronounce their R's correctly at first and that sort of thing. So I think that listening to real conversation has been the biggest help. I actually don't listen to audiobooks. And I'm thinking, as I'm listening to you talk, that's probably another great way. As you said, I think maybe I should, because I think it's a great way to hear how the character says something. And so I probably should do that. I don't listen to audiobooks because I feel like my mind wanders, and I would have to keep, going back. But another thing you said that was so interesting, the body language when you read something out loud. And I was writing something the other day, and my character is just, I'm writing my second novel now, and my character is just going through this, she's going down this rabbit hole trying to figure out what was going on with her deceased husband. Like, he was doing some things that were a little mysterious. And she's just in the thick of this, and I'm sitting and writing, and I'm going like this with my neck, and I'm thinking, oh, that's probably something she would be doing right now. So I kind of went back in and added that, because you're right, when you listen to it, you do get, and when you actually read it out loud, you tend to take on the persona, and the body language is a big help. But yeah, I would say making that transition from English teacher to never writing contractions or slang, and then going to, casual conversation has been a jump for me. But it's been fun. I think I always try to put a few really fun characters in my books who just really sort of bring that, they kind of break the tension, and they interact in a way with the main character that keeps her grounded. And so they're the ones usually who the conversation have more of that informal flair to them. And I enjoy writing it, because it's, as an English teacher, it's a no-no.
Well, but now that you said that, though, that transition was a little challenging for me too when I went from corporate world and writing not technical pieces per se, but you're writing vision statements for your organization, or you're writing PR pieces that are showing what's going on in the organization to showcase it to the rest of the company, or an outward facing into the community itself. So it's a different style of writing. And when I first transitioned from being in the corporate world to running my own business, and I was realizing, a lot of the guidance that was taught was, well, you want to you want it to feel like how you would talk. So are you using contractions? And I was remember thinking, oh, a contraction? Where? I'm not used to that. But I know that even when I'm writing though, I want it to feel like me all the way through. So
Exactly.
there are times when it will feel like it's a contraction, and there are times when I don't use them. It just depends upon what it is. So even when I read my own pieces without any dialogue, if it feels like it would be something that I would say, or that it feels authentic versus, we have to stick into this rule,
Right.
it's been helpful that way to kind of to allow that transition. And so
Yes. My readers who know me, because of course they're your first sale, tell me that they hear my voice in my writing, and not necessarily the dialogue, but often in the narrative, because you can't help it. And so you still do have that, again, you have that, you find that voice, you have a unique voice. And if you think about it, we read authors, I mean, I do, and I like their style. There are some authors that, again, you could cover up the name and cover up the title, and you would know after the first few pages who the author is. And I think, to your point, I think that's a sign of the craft. I think because the craft is very important to me, as I sense it is to you. And so that's where, again, not just in the dialogue, but even in the narrative, you do have that voice that shines through. And you're, like you say, you're writing, this is something that I would say, or how I might say it.
Yeah, and especially when you view yourself as a writer, as an author, you are running a business. So you probably have a website. You probably are sending email communications to your community itself and telling them what's going on. How is your current WIP? Are you going to be at certain events? Or,
Right.
maybe you feature a different character, or you're fielding reader questions in different sessions. But wherever, or social posts, wherever you are writing, even if it's not in your book itself, it still should feel like you, because all of that is a part of you. It should feel like there's a connectedness between the books that you are publishing, the pieces that are on your website that are associated, even if it's a pen name. That pen name, that persona needs to show up in a form of continuity between what you've written, how it's showing up in the digital space, if you will, and how you're promoting it in that way. I mean,
Yeah.
that's what I'm hearing from what you're saying. Is that
Yes,
would you?
and like I said, readers are smart. They're smart, they're savvy. They're loyal. And so I think, and we could talk about the business of book writing. We could be here for 17 hours talking about that and probably not finish. But you're so right. You tend to think, okay, you write a book and, I'll finish it and the band will swell, the music will play and masses will be applauding. No, there's a whole business to have. Okay, I've finished this book. How am I going to get it out into the world? I was never on social media because, as I said, as a teacher, we were really discouraged from the, plus it's really not my forte. But having become a writer and a published author, it's imperative. I mean, you have to have a social media presence, as you said. I have a website, and whenever I write, if I write a post or whatever I might do, and I love promoting other authors, and so I do that a lot. But you're right. When people read anything that I write or share on social media, and then they read my books, there shouldn't be a huge disconnect. There shouldn't be, wait a minute, this is how she is on social media. And I'm not saying, I mean, certainly your books have different themes, and there are times when you're more serious or less serious, but that is so true. That there should be that connectedness, if that's a word, to when people read your promotions or whatever it might be, and then they pick up your book to read it, they want to feel like, hey, this is her. I've gotten to know her. I've gotten to know her, through social media or through her website or through this promotion or giveaway or whatever it might be. And you're right, that's so important. And I think that's where we do develop and really hone our own style and voice.
So I love that you mentioned, the business side, because I love that part so much. I think that it's such a, because the hat of the craft, those challenges that you face, even when you are being confronted by feedback from a beta reader or your editor or what have you, and you are whatever, maybe you wrote yourself into a corner and you need to figure out how to get yourself out of that corner, or that messy middle is really driving you batty, or how to create connect some scenes or add some more depth. Yes, those are challenges, but they're still craft related challenges that you obviously do well because, or want to do well in, because you continue to show up and to write. So those challenges, that hat is fairly comfortable, but the hat of the business that, as an author, you are wearing, because once you became a, you started selling books, you became a business.
Exactly.
So I, and it's a different hat to wear and to learn to become comfortable with it too. So I'm curious what some are some feedback that, or rather some tips that you might offer to an author who is trying to get used to that business hat.
Yeah, it's I think it's one of those things where you don't know what you don't know. It feels and seems kind of glamorous. Especially at the outset. And I mean, I love writing. You're so right. The challenges that come with editing and rewriting, I've written myself into more corners than I can count. But again, that's writing. I can handle that. I can, put the gloves back on the next day and start over. But that business part of it, when you finish and you're looking for, how to get the book out into the world, I've learned a lot. As a debut author, I mean, you sort of, it's like you're just, you hold your nose and you jump in the deep end of the pool. And I've had the great fortune of connecting with many, many authors who have helped me, taken me under their wing, taught me so much. Do this, don't do that. And not in a sort of bossy or controlling way, but here's my experience. Here's what I would offer as suggestions. And I think what I would take, the main tips for anybody who dares to get into this, I think I love quotes. I think it was Dorothy Parker, an American novelist and I think also a playwright, who said, if you have a friend who's thinking about becoming an author, the first thing you should do is give them this book. And I think it's called, I could be wrong, but I think it's called Elements of Style. And then she says, the second thing you should do is shoot them now while they're still happy.
Oh my gosh.
And she's talking about exactly what we're talking about. The writing, do this, follow your gut. Here's the part that's tough. What I would say is, know your publishing goals. Do your research. I didn't know. I thought you either got picked up by the Big Five, as they call them, Random House and Simon and Schuster and the other one and the other one and the other one, or you self-published, which I knew nothing about, and it has come a long way and is actually a great publishing model in many ways. But at the time, I thought, okay, self-publishing means you print your own books, you sell them out of the trunk of your car, you hope you sell them to your family and friends, and that's it. I didn't know there's a whole world in between there. And I started out kind of shooting for the stars, and I did query a lot of agents at the Big Five because they all have tons of imprints. And I thought, wow, I have this great story, this woman who has this childhood trauma that she's buried and she never dealt with it. And then she gets married and her husband begins behaving strangely. And so she's got to, her journey is this navigating this path of, am I going to deal with this now, or am I going to pass on this generational trauma? And I'm thinking, who would not want to represent this gem? Well, it turned out all of them did not want to represent this gem. And, I got rejection after rejection, but I got a lot of positive feedback. It wasn't, this is garbage, no one will read it kind of feedback. It was more like, this is good, it's not for me right now, that kind of thing. And so after, I hadn't done my research. And after sort of a year of that behavior, literally about a year of that, I started to investigate. Actually, a family friend told me about hybrid and indie publishing, which I n had never even heard of. So I did a little research, as a debut author with really not a social media presence. I started to do some research into indie and hybrid publishing, and that's where I ended up. And that was really the right place for me. Now, moving forward, I may try for small press or who knows. I've made wonderful connections, as I said. But initially, I didn't even know that these publishing forms existed. And I think that would be my advice to set to writers. And it's not as much fun as the writing, but do your research, connect with other authors. Authors are wonderful, warm, compassionate, gracious people. It's not like the corporate world where, it's not cutthroat. It's not, I want you to buy my product and not yours. We want readers to buy all of our books. Our audience of avid readers, they're not going to wake up one day and say, "That's it, I've read enough books, I'm done." And so I would also, as I said, research the publishing models, but make connections, connect with other authors. That has been just the most wonderful part of this journey for me. I've made friends that I've actually had the honor of meeting in person, but also virtual friends who I meet with regularly, lean on. I'm having a Zoom call today with an author, Barbara Connery, who's become a dear friend of mine, and Anna Quinn, who you're probably familiar with. She's a fantastic author. We met Anna at the Women's Fiction Conference in Chicago in September. We've kept in touch and we help each other. And I think, like I said, I'm very humbled by that because I'm so new. But that is the thing that I think writers, especially debut writers, making those connections, listening to the advice of those who came before us, but also doing your research and thinking about what really are my publishing goals. Do I want to hire a publicity team? There's a lot that goes into it. So after the fun part, which isn't fun every day, as we know, writing, that's what I would suggest to do your research and make connections.
I love that. And Barbara has been on this show before. She is so
Isn't she
lovely. I'm
fabulous?
so glad when you mentioned her, I'm like, oh, she's so lovely.
She is. And I know you've had Leslie Rasmussen and Suzanne Simonetti. I mean, they've just been wonderful. And it's not the kind of thing where you talk every day, but it's you have a question or you have an issue that comes up, and the other authors really are. They're a very generous and gracious community. And as I said, I could name many that I've met, and but it's such I couldn't have I really I don't think I could have navigated the business part of it without making those connections. And again, it's not everybody's experience is going to be the same, but they share their experiences and then you use that information and try to make the best decisions for yourself, because writing is it's a very solitary endeavor in many ways when you're writing, other than your editor and the people telling you to fix things. But once you start the business side of it, then that's where you can kind of be part of that awesome community.
I love that so much. And you mentioned more of some of my favorites. So thank you so much for shout outs to Leslie and to Suzanne too. But Lee, where can people connect with you? Where can they get your book? This has been fantastic. I would love for them to hear how they can connect with you.
Well, thank you. So my debut novel, A Week of Warm Weather, it came out in the summer of 22. And you can read all about me and my work at my website, which is just leebukowski.com. I am on Instagram and Facebook. I'm working now on my second novel. And so in the interim, I try to do a lot of promotion of other authors. I also host a little podcast of my own on Bookish Road Trip. It's a Facebook group of over 5,000 members where I interview a panel of authors whose work has a common thread, which has been wonderful. As you know, meeting other authors and listening to their experiences is just that's just invaluable. But yeah, so I'm on Facebook and Instagram, but you can read about me at my website, leebukowski.com.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Jen. It's been so nice meeting you.